Today's program has been brought to you by the Heritage Meat Shop, located in the historic Essex Street Market in New York City. For more information, visit heritagemeatshop.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Burning Down the House on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. Welcome to episode 125. Oh my God, 125 hours of me. That's oppressive. Luckily, occasionally we can convince guests to come on. You know, Heritage Radio Network is all about volunteer activities. Our sort of de facto theme today is volunteerism, which is a well-established tradition in the United States and in other places. Excuse me, I'm sipping some delicious tea from one of our sponsors. Right before we went on the air, our estimable engineer, Joe, and I were starting to talk about the possibilities of taking the audio stream of Heritage Radio Network and possibly figuring out how to broadcast it on shortwave. Joe, are you there?
I'm here, Curtis.
Yeah. So, Sealandia, I guess you'd never heard of that. Sealandia is still a sovereign nation which is comprises a platform in the North Sea that was used as a gun station in World War II. And in the 1960s, a British subject discovered that this particular abandoned gun platform was beyond the territorial, or say, not well, the territory, but beyond the jurisdictional limits of Great Britain. And so he claimed it. He just occupied it, and he claimed it, and he declared that it was the Principality of Sealandia. And they had pirate radio transmitted from Sealandia. And to this day, you can buy yourself a passport from Sealandia. It became a hereditary principality, just like Britain. At one point, when the prince and princess were offshore on vacation, some corporate raiders, real corporate raiders, came armed, and they seized Sealandia. And then there was some wrangling, and the prince hired some mercenaries of his own to take it back. But the original idea of Heritage Radio Network was that it would be sort of a pirate radio operation, like, sort of like the crazy plot line, which is only partially correct, of the, you know, the Jack Black movie, Pirate Radio, that was out a few years ago. Which, if you look at it, I mean, they're doing all sorts of stupid things wrong, like queuing up records in a way that professional people would never queue up records. You know, you don't just drop the needle on it. But you know all that, Joe, right? I mean, you studied some broadcast engineering.
Yeah, music technology.
Right, so.
That's it.
Yeah. Volunteerism. Yeah, all of the hosts on Heritage Radio Network are volunteers. We don't get paid. We do it because it's the right thing to do. We do it because we have a commonly held notion that each of us in our own specific expertise have information to share. And that's a good lead-in to the conversation that I wanted to have with today's guest, Leah Krieger, who is an architect in New York. She lives in Brooklyn. She's also a mom of a charming grade schooler. She's a graduate of the Rhode Island School of Design, and I guess you have a couple other degrees, too.
Hi. Hi, Curtis.
Hi, Leah.
I do. I also attended the Pratt Institute of Community Economic Development.
Super. Well, community development is one of the goals of Heritage Radio Network. Now, I met Leah recently through volunteer efforts aimed at being able to share information with people in Breezy Point, Queens. And if any of you who are listening also happened to watch the 12-12-12 concert just this last week on the 12th of December, 2012, if you stayed up till past 1 o'clock in the morning, you will have seen introduced the Volunteer Fire Department of Point Breeze. 14 of those members who were introduced and then joined the stage with Sir Paul McCartney at the end of the concert. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the volunteer opportunities that exist in Breezy Point. But before we get into that, let's have a little bit of a musical break so we can frame our thoughts. You know, this is...
Take it to the end. A little out of tune.
Oh, yeah. That was George Naha playing a little Wind Cries Mary. If you just tuned in, this is Burning Down the House on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Curtis B. Wayne, and I'm speaking with architect Leah Krieger. Leah is one of the people who've been volunteering their services out in Breezy Point, Queens, part of the Rockaways, this barrier reef sandbar that is south of Brooklyn, and it's right on the ocean. So tell us about your how you got involved with this.
Well, the lifeguard at my local pool said, why don't you go down? And so it took me a few weeks to go down. But you know, more than that, the impetus of that was, you know, in 2008 the city had a competition for designing emergency shelters after a hurricane, after a fictitious hurricane, after a hurricane that had been imagined, called What If. And with Josh Dworkis, we presented a competition entry. It was a kit of parts for people to repair their buildings and to stay in their own communities. And when the winners were announced, I was stunned to see that every single winner was a prefabricated home, which in fact I think is a really wonderful thing, but I don't think it's the only way to help people after they have suffered loss of their home.
Yeah, it could be kind of dreary if done poorly. I think it could be, kind of nasty. I mean, there's not a big difference between a FEMA trailer and a prefabricated house done wrong, right?
Right, although, of course, you can make a prefabricated trailer look, you know, be very comfortable and look very cool and look very sexy. And of course, it's not all about the trailer itself. It's also about where you locate it and how you group it.
So, oh, sure. Yeah. And I don't know. A few months ago, we had a conversation with Joe Tanney, one of the principals of Resolution 4 Architecture, and their practice is entirely about prefabricated factory built modules that are specifically designed one by one, but they're prefabricated, and then they're brought to the site, and they're put on a foundation, and they're joined together. And you can do real architecture with prefab, for sure. But so the prefab didn't interest you all that much. How would your take differ?
Well, I have to back up a little bit. I do think that a prefabricated group of showers, or a prefabricated group of kitchens, or prefabricated laundry station or prefabricated hand washing station, some of which I did see out on the Rockaways. I saw, I did see a trailer with a lot of showers and a hand washing station, but I definitely think that those are some really great solutions. What I was hearing as I talked to people was that there's all different levels of need out there, much of which is the need for repair. And so we have to kind of talk to people and meet them where their need is, you know, as if it's a little need or greater need. And so when I first went out there, actually what I did is when I first went out there, I went to the Rockaways. I went to 113th Street, went to about four different locations in the Rockaways. And my intention was to do a grassroots architecture competition, to talk to people who were on the ground about their ideas about how to improve things. And I ran this idea by some other architects. I ran it by Evan Wagner, and I ran it by Chris Benedict. And the suggestion I heard is maybe it's not so much a competition, maybe it's a documentation. So just go out there and see what you find, and you know, see how you can serve. And so what we came up with is what we're calling a toolkit. And the toolkit is a very simple method. It's a very simple process of how other architects and engineer and design pros can help building owners that are in need. And this one page document is we've written it up, and it's now available as in public domain on the website of stormenormous.com. So if you go to stormenormous.com, you can download the toolkit that has a one-page process for how pros can help people in need. So it doesn't have to be in Rockaway. It doesn't have to be in Breezy Point. It can be anywhere where there's somebody in need, from Sandy or other places as well. You know, we heard a lot of interest from other pros, like, we want to help. But due to the sort of sheer enormity of what's going on, people don't really, you know, some people don't really know how to help with their professional skills. And so this is a really simple process of how pros can go in and help people just really get to the next step, and then maybe get to the next step after that. But it's we feel very sensitive and very simple and very light light approach.
Uh-huh. I have all kinds of questions that have come up. Give me a moment. I can organize him a little bit. Joe, give me 30 seconds of the next track from George, please. That got me working. If you've just turned in, logged in. This is Burning Down the House on Heritage Radio Network. We're talking with Leah Krieger, and we're talking about volunteer opportunities for design professionals, specifically starting with what you can do if you are interested in volunteering to help out with the damage that was caused by Superstorm Sandy. So my first question is, How do you get buy-in? Wouldn't it be better if these efforts were through the auspices of, say, Occupy Sandy, the group that is headquartered at 520 Clinton Avenue in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn, or under the auspices of your local American Institute of Architects chapter, or through Architects for Humanity, Cameron St. Clair's organization? Or even Habitat for Humanity.
I'd like very much if there were a button for stormenormous.com on Occupy Sandy's website. And that's, in fact, a possibility. And I've talked with people who can do that, and that is a possibility. One of the concerns that I'm hearing is that sometimes there's more aid that's going to more of the middle class neighborhoods in the Rockaways and less to the poor neighborhoods. And so one of the hopes is that the things that are learned in some of the more middle-class neighborhoods like Breezy Point can then be applied to some of the neighborhoods with more need in the Rockaways. And we certainly do hope that there ends up being a button on the Occupy Sandy site. And, I mean, to be frank, when I started going out to the Rockaways, I was sort of looking at, you know, the sort of whole thing. But, you know, you can only do so much. My commitment is to go out there one day a week. And once I started to meet some people in Breezy Point, there's only sort of so much you can do. And so that's where I'm going. And really, this has been a pilot project so far, but the intention is to share it on one of the Sandy sites. So that doesn't answer your question about Architecture for Humanity or about the AIA, but it is being coordinated with people very involved in the Sandy relief efforts, and we do intend to continue to coordinate with them.
Even though you yourself haven't, you haven't organized your own posse that, with a name. It, I mean, you're just doing it, right?
Well, I certainly considered looking for an umbrella, but it was suggested to me, sort of just do it. And so what we're calling the process is a series of informal drawing sessions or charrettes, where basically the design pro goes out and talks to building owners. And basically about their ideas and draws with them. So it helps people to visualize their own ideas. And also the design pros have a toolkit of some drawings and specifications so that they can share their experience. You know, being sort of very careful to sort of couch this in sort of a very light manner. So the pros are basically drawing the ideas of the building owners. And also the pros are sharing specifications for products that they have experience with that work. For instance, a sheetrock that's not a paperback sheetrock, so that when sheetrock goes back up on the walls, that they're less likely to get moldy in the future with future storms.
You mean like dense glass?
Yeah.
Right. Well, we know that Mayor Bloomberg has issued an executive order, which he can do as the mayor, and they're usually good for 5 days, and he has kept renewing this one particular executive order, which waives filing fees with the DOB for reconstruction work. That was caused by Superstorm Sandy, but it doesn't, at least as I read it, and perhaps you've read these also, and they're up on the city website. It doesn't say that filings are waived, so doesn't that get a little murky?
It gets so murky that I'm not even sure that I want to touch on it. But you know, filing fees at the DOB is only one of several fees that are associated with people filing work at
sure.
the DOB.
Yeah, that's right. Not that I'm a big proponent of the AIA. Matter of fact, I resigned the AIA in 1988 in protest of their throwing a party for Prince Charles, which was funded in part from general membership fees. Prince Charles, who I feel to be an incredibly reactionary and anti-progressive spokesperson, an unelected potentate who has, and this isn't a public record, interfered with most notably the project that was being developed by the Candy Brothers for the Chelsea Barracks site in London. Now, that was a long time after I was on the AIA. But the reason I bring up the AIA, the American Institute of Architects, is because they have an established way to do workshops for situations like this, which they call a RUDAT, an R/UDAT, regional urban design action team approach, which, because these RUDAT sessions are done under the auspices of the AIA, tends to help shield the efforts of the individual design professionals who may participate. So I think what I'm hearing is that you feel that those of us who have the time and have the interest should just simply make themselves available to organizations such as Occupy Sandy, because there's just so much work to be done. Something like that.
I don't think I'm, you know, prescribing, you know, how people should respond when there are things like that happen of such enormity. I don't think that there's a right way to respond and a wrong way to respond.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, I did look into the AIA's response. I did look into Architecture for Humanity's response, and I did sign up for at least two of those efforts, Architecture for Humanity's, and I attended one of their trainings,
mm-hmm.
and I signed up for one other professional volunteer effort that I never heard back from on. I can't remember which one that is right now. So I'm not trying to prescribe a right way or a wrong way to respond to this. I can tell you that when I got the 6-page form that Architecture for Humanity was asking people to use as a questionnaire for people to have been affected, and almost none of the questions had anything to do with the specifics of a building, I was very turned off by that. I thought that there could be another sort of lighter, more agile, and ultimately more effective way to go.
Right. Yeah.
And so this intention is that this can be done as teams, or this can be done as individuals. It can be done on your time for as much or as little time as you might have to offer, and it can also be done for a place that you're connected with. It doesn't have to have anything to do with the Rockaways.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Well said. I do understand that there is a sort of a clearinghouse site that has been put together, and that is being administered by one of the officers of the Point Breeze Volunteer Fire Department. And that website can be accessed if you go to rebuildingbreezypoint.com. And if you look at the sector map, that is one of the resources that you can download from that site. You will see that Breezy Point, and just specifically talking about Breezy Point in this thread, has been divided into sectors. And so, for example, the area that was totally burned out, they call that the devastation area, I believe, has been adopted by Project Blessing, which I understand is being... I think it's a religious group that's undertaking that or supporting that. And then there's another sector where Architects for Humanity has been mapped out as, well, they've decided that they're going to adopt some reconstruction in another area. So these are organizations which one could become affiliated with, right, in terms of volunteer opportunities.
I don't know very much about Operation Blessing at all, so I can't speak to that.
Okay. Well,
I did look at rebuildbreezypoint.com, and I saw that the volunteer organizations were all offering the gut and pump services, which some people are saying is phase one.
Can you describe that for us? What does that mean?
Well, I guess there's some question as to whether it's gut and pump or pump and gut. But the point is to get the water out, to get the wet sand out, to get the wet construction materials out. So it's pumping out the water and getting out the waterlogged construction materials.
Right, right. And even though it's been 7 or 8 weeks since that storm, what are the conditions out there that you've observed?
Well, as far as I know, there are still many homes that still have to be gutted and pumped.
Uh-huh. Wow. Now, are these total guts, or are these like halfway up the wall guts? What kind of stuff is being removed?
I'm going to just speak to my experience, which the last couple of weeks has just been limited to Breezy Point.
Right.
And so I want to mention that one of the reasons that we think that prose can be so effective is that there are some things that can be repeated, like this sort of, you know, catchphrase, like gut and pump. That's something that has to be done a lot. In fact, it doesn't have to be done on all homes, because some buildings, in fact, had much less water than other homes. So there's both this sort of combination of, okay, looking at what works and repeating what works, but then there's this sort of finer point, whereas each building really has, there's a lot of individuality to each building. Even if there's, you know, a lot of similarities between different bungalows in the Rockaways, they could have been built at different times. They could have had different amount of damage. They certainly have different owners, different qualities of construction, different preferences, different resources. So for that reason, we believe that even though a lot of things can be repeated, there's also a lot of need for an individual response to each building, and for each building to have a plan.
Right. Just to step sideways for a moment, you mentioned other areas in the Rockaways. I have heard from people I believe are in a position to actually know and not just guess that some parts of the Rockaways are rather unsafe presently. From your own experience, is it safe to go out to Breezy Point?
It's certainly safe to go out to parts of Breezy Point.
Yeah, because I read in the paper that early on that there was some looting that was happening there, but you haven't seen any sort of mayhem like that going on.
The only firsthand experience I have with that is that a building owner, a longtime resident, said, usually we don't lock our doors, and now we have to lock our doors. And a lot of the reason for that is that many people are they're not there, because while their houses need to be in a state of repair, they're not there. And to be frank, I'm not sure where they are. But that's the only personal experience I've heard about the looting.
Uh-huh. Okay. So what are some websites that we can go to where people would find opportunities to volunteer?
Well, Respond and Rebuild has a really great process. I mean, there's all these words thrown out there, like, you know, assessment. Like, the DOB uses that word in a particular way, and Respond and Rebuild uses that word in a particular way. I'm almost even hesitant to use the word plan, because that's going to mean one thing to some people and another thing to another to other people. But going to Respond and Rebuild can help. I mean, one of the things that Sandy has done is they've trained people that aren't pros in mold remediation. And so what that basically means is you find the high water mark, and then you find how I was told on the day that I got trained is that you go 2 feet higher than the high water mark, and then you take out the sheetrock from there down. And if you're particularly close to the ceiling, you end up taking the sheetrock all the way up. So Respond and Rebuild has a process down to dry out buildings, and they just started a fundraiser for $250,000 for 250 homes, so $1,000 a home. And it's not crystal clear to me what they intend to do with that, if they're both drying out homes, if they're dealing with the backlog of homes that need to be dried out. I'm not sure if they're insulating the homes, but Respond and Rebuild is a really great one.
What's the URL for that?
I believe it's respondandrebuild.org.
Okay. And then there's rebuildingbreezypoint.com. And then what's the URL for Occupy Sandy?
Can you give me a minute on that one, Curtis?
Okay, sure. Okay, let's have a little bit of music while Leah is looking up the URL.
The following is a message from the Heritage Meat Shop.
Are you tired of just hearing buzzwords? Do you want to actually take part in the food revolution? Then come on down to the Heritage Meat Shop, located in New York's historic Essex Street Market, on the corner of Essex and Delancey. We have rare breed pork, beef, poultry, lamb, and goat, not to mention charcuterie that'll make you squeal. All raised right, by the right people, so you know they'll taste right. Try the meat that over 100 New York chefs ache for. Come to the Heritage Meat Shop and pick up some revolution today.
For more information, visit heritagemeatshop.com.
Are we back? This is Burning Down the House on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Curtis B. Wing. We're talking about opportunities to volunteer. All of you architects out there, all you guys and girls, put your expertise to work. There's incredible devastation. The entire Jersey Shore pretty much wiped out. Vast portions of Long Island, parts of Connecticut. It's your opportunity to give back. We've talked at some length in previous episodes about the implied social contract that is inherent, arguably, in the act of having been licensed by the state to be an architect. And I would argue that therefore, we have an obligation to give back to our communities without compensation. Which is interesting because the current steps towards licensure, which is administratively conducted by the National Council of Architectural Registration Boards, also known as NCARB, the IDP process, the intern development process, requires a certain number of hours of charitable work, which further underscores my notion of implied social contract of that a certain amount of pro bono work needs to be done once you are a licensed architect. So we're here with Leah Krieger, and she's found the URL for
Occupy Sandy is interoccupynet/OccupySandy.
interoccupynet/OccupySandy.
And the website that we've put up is stormenormous.com, and that's thanks to Chris Benedict for that name and right. That URL.
Right, and you can, if you look through our archives, you can find the episode where Chris was sitting, right where you're sitting, Leah, and we talked about Chris's work and especially her pioneering work in energy and also the fact that she helped write some of the new zoning ordinances that allow additional insulation without it being a detriment to the FAR of a building. So it's a kind of an interesting and small world getting smaller every day. It's very amazing.
So I do have to mention I'm talking to a woman whose family home on the Jersey Shore wasn't devastated, but it was changed very much. And this is one of the communities where new inlets was carved in.
Mm-hmm.
Lavalette is
there. Lavalette. Wow, yeah.
And when I mentioned to her that they might not want to put fiberglass back in the house, mm-hmm. She seemed very surprised. And she said, that's what everybody's doing out there.
That's, well, you know, that's the status quo, right? That's one of the reasons you're interested in helping people understand their alternatives, right?
That's right.
And so if we're talking about re-insulating a wall, what sorts of materials are you in favor of?
Well, we're making suggestions to people. We're not calling them recommendations. We're calling them suggestions, and we're suggesting spray foam insulation.
What kind of spray foam? Polyurethane? Isonine?
Closed cell spray foam insulation.
Doesn't that require that you have to hire someone with a really big truck to come to your house and take hoses around? And also, what about volatile organic compounds that might be in the blowing agents for those foams?
It does require that you need to hire somebody with a truck, so your home needs to be accessible by truck, and some of the homes in Breezy Point actually aren't. But what I'm told is that at least the installer I talked to has, 300-foot-long hose, so it would be able to reach a lot of the homes. I can't really speak to the VOC, because I know that the amount of energy that can be saved by using such an insulation, I think could far outweigh the benefits, dare I say this, of some VOCs being released. So yeah. I can't really speak to the VOCs being released, but I know there are benefits that make it so that people should consider them.
Right. Well, to my mind, stepping back and looking at the enormity and scale of work that needs to be done, while there are lots of able-bodied constructors around, not all of them have the experience, or shall we say, sophistication, to know about site sprayed on, closed cell, polyurethane, or whatever the chemical composition is. Insulation, what they do know is fiberglass spat. Some of them know about using board insulation. What's your feeling about using extruded polystyrene like XPS, or also known by various trade names like Deckmate, for example?
I think that can be absolutely fine. I mean, I have heard some stories about mold getting between the rigid insulation and the wood behind it, but in certain applications, it can be fine.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons that there's important. It's important to have a pro to help people come up with an approach. And there's so many people, many of which has never worked with a pro before. And again, this is an effort that, whether there's 10 people doing this or whether there's, 300 people doing this, this is of course the more the better. And we're very eager to hear, about people's experience, and we're very eager to have people submit things to be uploaded to the toolkit.
Mm-hmm. Well, what happens? I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment here. Because it's been asked of me. What happens then, Madam Architect, if we take our house and we replace all the insulation with this wonderful space age spray foam stuff? And some people know about this because you can buy a 12-ounce aerosol can at Home Depot of the same kind of stuff, but in a smaller quantity, under various trade names like, Great Stuff and Stuff It. And the Hilti Corporation has their more commercial grade version of that, which you can also, get at Lowe's or Home Depot or your hardware store. So people know about that, but they also know that the stuff is very sticky. It expands enormously from its initial volume. Therefore, it's really sealing up all the cracks in a house. How do we end up not having a house that's so well sealed that we end up with sick building syndrome?
Well, the answer to that is that we control the ventilation instead of having uncontrolled and involuntary ventilation. We just control where it happens.
So instead of relying on infiltration, the cracks around windows and between window sashes and things like that, what is an alternative?
An alternative is to have trickle vents in the windows and have bathroom fans to pull the pull the air out of the house.
Therefore, to induce an airflow.
Right.
By negatively pressurizing the house with bathroom fans, or I suppose you could also do that with kitchen fans, right? If they're vented to the outside.
Right.
Right. Or there are also the approaches that people, and we've talked about this a lot over the last 3 years, proponents of the passive house approach will use a specific kind of ventilator. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
You know, I'm very interested in this approach, but because I don't have experience actually doing that, I'm uncomfortable going very far into it, but I can tell you that I did use what is called an ERV in my first project a couple of years ago, and we did it under the auspices of ventilating a painting studio. But I was just, you know, thrilled to finally have that experience of using it, because that is how many passive houses are ventilated.
Right. ERV stands for what?
Energy recovery ventilator.
And how's that different from just a plain old fan?
It brings in fresh air from the outside, and it takes the air that was inside and it sends it to the outside, and it recovers the heat from one side as it goes to the other side. So you're not just sending the hot air to the outside. You're keeping the heat during heating season that was inside, and you're applying it to the fresh air. So you're not just losing the heat.
So it cycles back and forth between bringing in air and expelling air.
That's right. It's like a big sort of X diagram.
Uh-huh. Does the fan actually reverse direction?
No, it doesn't. Huh. Reverse direction.
I seem to recall hearing about a brief video that's available online with Dr. Wolfgang Feist, who was the he created the Passive House Institute in Darmstadt. Do you happen to have the URL for that?
I can get that in just a couple of minutes.
Okay, well, while you're looking that up, I'm going to just continue talking. Those of you who are loyal listeners should go back through our archives. You will find that we had 2 hours of conversation with Ryan Enchity, who's a passive house architect in Brooklyn, and one of his colleagues, because I don't have a computer in front of me, I can't tell you what episode that was. But we've talked about passive house with Ryan extensively, and I'm happy to give him a plug. And we've also talked about passive house with Gennaro Brooks Church, and also briefly in passing with Henry Gifford, the famous, as some would say, those of you who are USGBC members would say the infamous Henry Gifford, and I've spoken about that a little bit in his attempt to get more transparency in terms of data available from the United States Green Building Council, USGBC, the people who created LEED, the LEED system of rating buildings based on not only energy efficiency, but also sourcing of materials more locally, and also looking at reducing harmful VOCs in the interior air quality, or IAQ, areas. Do you have that URL yet?
What I have is, if you go to the 475.com website, which is a building supply website.
Are those numbers or is it spelled out?
It's all spelled out, 475.com. And the name of the movie is called Passive Passion. So if you go to that website and search for Passive Passion, you will find the play button.
Cool. Excellent. I think that's a really nice resource that people would want to have a look at. Because I myself looked at that briefly, and there's Dr. Feist himself explaining the origins of their thinking, and also a little interview with a fellow who lives in a passive house in Germany, which is interesting to me because it all started with a couple of houses in the United States, out in the Rockies, and then it was adopted. Now, passive house standards have become part of building regulations in Austria. When Ryan Enchedi was here in the studio, he showed me a book of details that was published. These are mandatory details, mostly devoted to eliminating thermal bridges from the outside to the inside. And so, I mean, in terms of making a really good enclosure, the Europeans are way ahead of us, way, way.
And the movie also mentions that it's required in Frankfurt as well.
Aha, uh-huh. Just in Frankfurt.
It mentions Frankfurt.
Uh-huh. Interesting, because the I really need to get a trip to Frankfurt because I know that there's the Deutsches Architektur Museum there, and I've had a couple of conversations with Dr. Wilfried Wang, who, despite his Chinese name, is very much a German.
I remember Willy Wang.
Willy Wang.
William Wang. Willy Wang. German.
Yeah,
the way to say. The way to say William in German.
Well, that's true. Although Dr. Wang says he doesn't mind if it goes Anglo, because he did go to school in the United Kingdom, and he speaks really remarkably perfect received pronunciation.
He published something I wrote years and years and years ago. I remember him.
That you'd read, yeah. So he was the original director of the Deutsches Architektur Museum, which was... Then designed by David Chipperfield, for whom I am told that Dr. Wang worked when he was just right out of school. So it's very interesting how small our profession is, that, you know, we're really only 2 degrees of separation away from...
Sir Paul McCartney.
Sir Paul McCartney, or David Chipperfield, for that matter. One of my stars. I entirely endorse Mr. Chipperfield's pronouncements, and I have spoken about that previously. But those of you who didn't hear my little rant about the latest Venice Biennale, Mr. Chipperfield came straight out and he said he's just sick to death of having people talk about what buildings look like. He's more interested in the ideas behind how they ended up looking the way that they did. And wouldn't it be nice if instead of having these stagey presentations that are almost like... Do you know about Japanese theater called no theater, where the moves are prescribed and where you stand on the stage is related to the geometry of the stage, which is also related to the geometry of the pavilion in which the stage is positioned, which is also related to the geometry of the site in which it's located. Anyway, it's like no theater. It's all pro forma, and people get off into archy speak, and they really don't talk about their ideas much. And he would just prefer if we could all just get together and have a few drinks together and say what we really mean instead of making these bloated pronouncements.
Curtis, can I speak just a little bit more to... you know, our experience going out to the Rockaways?
Please do.
Now that we have had a little bit of time to sort of talk about it and reflect. So this sort of, you know, process that we've put together on StormEnormous.com in the toolkit, you know, it is a way to sort of get down in the trenches. You know, another name that we thought of is to call it was Architects Get Dirty. ArchitectsGetDirty.com.
AGD. I like it.
But I think one thing that's, you know, one of the many, many things that's important to remember is this sort of zooming into the trenches and then sort of, you know, zooming back out and looking at the sort of larger scale of things. We were trying not only to help people envision, you know, their ideas. I mean, as I was talking to a woman who was cleaning up her house and we started talking about boilers and I did a little drawing of a wall-mounted boiler, it seemed to sort of, you know, light her up like, oh, this is a way that I can get the boiler off of the floor, you know, in the basement. So that's like the sort of zoomed in. But I just want to also say we're also trying to ask the pros to help people sort of zoom out and think about 10, 20, 25 years down the road. And we're also asking people for their ideas for, you know, how to rebuild better. You know, I'm sure that the city, and I'm sure that the AIA and that Architects for Humanity will have, you know, some really good ideas. But we also think that some really good ideas are going to come, you know, from the trenches. And already one thing that has come out of this is the idea not only for a berm along the beach in Rockaway, and this comes from Marty Ingram, the chief of fire in Breezy Point, and also from somebody named Nicholas. I can't remember what Nicholas's last name was, one of the firemen out there, to have both a berm that also doubles as an emergency highway that also triples as a recreation area. So we're trying to, you know, really, really help people to sort of be nimble and to both zoom in to what your next step is, but also sort of step back and get perspective. And, you know, to be frank, we think that's sort of, you know, sort of a transformative, you know, healing thing that architects can offer. We do have that remarkable ability to change scales at the drop of a dime.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That was Nicholas Eacock, who's one of the volunteer firemen at Point Breeze VFD. And so you and I have discussed this previous to this. So my understanding, it would be an elevated roadway useful for emergency vehicles because during the storm surge, there was no way to get around except by boat. So an elevated road that's bermed on both sides as a wave delayer or something that would help diminish the surging waves, right? Slow down the currents and possibly diminish some of the devastating effects in the next big storm. And as our Governor Cuomo has said, that the 100-year storm appears to be coming every other year now.
Well, one of the things we learned is that during the fire is that the city fire trucks couldn't reach from the bridges because of the direction of the wind, the way that the wind was blowing. And so the idea is that the berm doubling as an emergency highway could allow that to happen.
Well, I mean, you'd have to proactively station emergency vehicles on the top of that roadway, I suppose, wouldn't you?
Well, I think one of the things that we learned is that certain actions be taken as you know that the storm is coming in. So I think that you could have access to it, and in the moment of emergency, you bring the trucks out.
Yeah, I keep thinking that coastal communities really need to get their hands on those amphibious ducks. You know, if you go to Boston, you can ride the Boston Duck, and it drives around on the streets, and it goes out into the bay. I've taken a duck ride. There's one in Philadelphia also, and so these vehicles are around, and they actually work, and they were, I think they were invented for the purpose of supporting the Normandy invasion, which is over 60 years ago, almost 70 now.
You know, I do also want to touch on, like, as you're looking at 10, 20 years away, that, you know, I also don't want to assume that all of these places should be rebuilt. I don't want to have that. I know it's the American way to rebuild, but I don't know. I don't want to assume that that's going to be the case everywhere.
Yeah, but doesn't that become difficult? Because, back to Breezy Point. It's an inexpensive place to live, owing to a variety of factors. Historically, the coastal areas have been, historically, over the last 75 years. In other words, not looking at the 20th century as a model, but historically, low-lying areas were where the poorer accommodations, where the poor folk lived. It was only in the 20th century that perhaps as a reaction to the grand cottages in Newport, which are right on the ocean, that people of modest means wanted to live in the lowland. Prior to that, the high ground is where the more well-to-do lived because it was safer. So, I mean, it's a huge social and difficult urban design proposition to vacate the lowland because that's where poor people have been living. And to then uproot the less economically fortunate and compel them to have to move someplace else, that's a very difficult proposition.
Well, things have certainly shifted around. Now there are, you know, mega developments being proposed in Zone A. So things have certainly shifted around about that. Mega developments, you know, seeking 421A tax benefits, you know, being constructed in Zone A. I mean, that's a whole other topic. Curtis, can I touch on something before we go, which is this whole thing that you started out with? You know, you're calling the volunteerism, and I'm calling the service. You know, really looking towards to the service in architecture. You know, architects have this thing where, you know, sometimes we work these crazy hours, you know, or there are some times of our life when we work crazy hours, whether it's during school or whether it's as a, you know, young architect, that, you know, we can do, you know, far more than 8-hour days, and or have our own business, that, you know, every so often we get the super late hours. But one of the things that I have learned is that, you know, working these longer hours doesn't necessarily, you know, serve our clients. And I just really want to sort of bring a push back there for, you know, actually, you know, being effective, you know, with our resources, you know, with our time, you know, with our energy. Like, if for the people who do see practicing architecture as a service, you know, I really ask that people sort of question that and sort of not assume that just because we are sort of known for plugging in the long hours, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're serving our clients or communities, not to mention ourselves.
You're preaching to the choir. we spent at least 1 hour with a former architecture student who quit the GSD because she got sick and tired of being expected to be in the studio day and night, when in fact she found that she was most effective taking a walk and looking at something different and then coming back and saying, "I got the idea." And I said, "Well, gee, how long did it take you?" And she said, "I don't know. I slept on it and I was done and I'm good and I'm going with it." And they said, "Well, that's not the right process." I think
you got to sweat over it.
Yeah, we called that episode "Go Home." Those of you who sit in front of your computers, you can look that up. If you're listening on iTunes, please check us out on heritageradionetwork.org. And I think we've come to the end of our allotted time. We've been speaking with Leah Krieger, who's an architect, and I would say an activist architect. Certainly you have the passion for service. I don't think there's going to be any more burning down the house for the rest of 2012. It is the holiday season. This is the episode 125 for the 16th of December 2012. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. I thank you all for listening. It's been a fantastic year. Keep the faith.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.